You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. The Detroit Journalism Cooperative, of which this station is a partner, commissioned a poll recently asking people about race. It was conducted by Epic MRA. The sample was unique because here's what we did. We asked one-third of those surveyed. They lived in mostly black communities, another third from communities which include different races, and then the final third from mostly white communities. Among the questions we asked was how people viewed the group Black Lives Matter. Now, in total, 54%, more than half, said they support the group. Broken down by race, 79% of African Americans support Black Lives Matter, 34% of whites support the group, 48% of Latinos or other races support the group. Black Lives Matter, Detroit, plans next month to release its platform called Keep Black Lives Living in Detroit. That's expected in late October. Before then, the group is hosting community forums and knocking on doors to better understand Detroit residents' concerns. Joining me is John Sloan III. He's part of Black Lives Matter, Detroit's core leadership team. Before we get to what you're hearing from the people and what your plans are to get their feedback, what did you think of those survey results? 54% overall support, 79% from African Americans, 34% from white people for Black Lives Matter.
Well, first of all, Lester, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I am not surprised by those numbers, and I think those numbers are only due to rise once the public has more of a grasp on who we are as an organization, as to what our goals are and how we plan to accomplish those goals.
So the reason Black Lives Matter began nationally is because unarmed black men and women being killed during interactions with police. Is the movement growing beyond that single issue and tackling others with this platform that you're putting together?
Oh, absolutely. I want to be sure to make it clear that we are not an organization focused on one singular issue, right? We're not working just against the issue of police brutality. We're working to make sure that all Black Lives Matter. In order to ensure that, we have to recognize from kind of a macro wide-angle lens how all these areas in our community, in our lives, in our society are interconnected.
We've not seen the kind of events that led to Ferguson or Baltimore in Detroit. It's been suggested that since Detroit has a black and popular chief of police, James Craig, and the majority of the force is made up of African-American officers, that things won't explode in Detroit as they have in other cities. Do you think that's true?
I think there are certain mitigating factors specific to Detroit. Detroit is the blackest city in the nation, and this is not just me saying right. that as a qualifier.
Of the large cities,
cities, right. And so, yes, I think those factors exist, and they could work to mitigate that type of Ferguson and Baltimore type of violence. But that's not to diminish the violence that exists on a daily basis. I want to be very clear. We're not walking around trying to accuse individual police officers. What we're talking about is the system at large. And so while you have individuals that might work in that system to do the best they can, that might be good, solid, upstanding individuals, and that are our neighbors and our brothers and our sisters, and you go to school with their kids and you play with them and you have cookouts with them on the 4th of July and on holidays, what we're talking about is a system that is inherently antithetical to racial equity, that inherently works against black and brown bodies and criminalizes them and creates violence and perpetrates violence against them on a systemic level. And as long as that system is in place, you're going to have this this inequity inherent to our culture and society.
I want to ask you about police relationships because that survey I was mentioning, the Detroit Journalism Cooperative survey, it also asked if police were treating African Americans better. Only 1% of white people and 2% of black people think that the police are treating African Americans any better since Baltimore, since Ferguson, those events. 74% of white people, 49% of black people think police are treating African Americans about the same. And then 15%, 37% black said they thought police were actually treating African Americans worse since those highly published news events about black people being killed by police. What do you think of those results? What does that tell you?
That tells me that there is still work we need to do as an organization when it comes to educating the public about what's going on. I tell people all the time, this is not something that just came up, right? That just started happening 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. The difference now is that everybody has a camera.
Right.
Everybody's a citizen journalist.
In fact, there was a big study out of Harvard that said, we're not seeing any more black people shot by police than we ever did before.
Absolutely.
We're just seeing it on social media.
Absolutely. I do think, though, there's a risk and a concern about backlash. And what we want to be careful about, because we are completely a nonviolent movement, but what we want to be careful about is making sure that we are aware that if police officers are feeling a certain pressure, right, that there is a potential, because everybody's human, for retaliation. Is there evidence that that has happened? No. Will the statistics bear that out? I'm not sure. But I think that we have, as an organization, as a culture, as a society, have to be careful about how we have the conversation. There's a lot of talk whenever something happens about we have to have this national conversation, and there will be a panel, and there will be a police officer and a reverend, and everybody will pat themselves on the back, and that'll be the end of it. But how you have the conversation, how you follow through with the conversation is why organization like ours still exists.
There's been a lot of effort among many police departments to have community outreach. In fact, there's a whole department office within the Department of Justice to help local police departments do that. Have you guys heard from Police Chief James Craig or from the police department in some kind of outreach way to say, hey, we could be the same place as other cities have found themselves if we don't start talking?
From the police chief himself, no. There was an action at the third precinct a couple months ago, where a few of our members and it was a combined action with Black Lives Matter and Black Youth Project, and some members were arrested for chaining themselves to the door of the police station.
Right.
There was some outreach immediately after that. I have to be completely honest and say that it was not necessarily the type of outreach that it would be positive. I'm not going to say that it was negative, because there was a phone call that was placed, and you appreciate any attempt to have a conversation. But it was framed in a very, well, we're not sure why you guys are so upset kind of tone. Is that
a legitimate question?
Well, you know what? I think if you aren't aware of the way that different forces in this city and in the country at large can interrelate, then that might be a legitimate question, which is why I said earlier, I think a large amount of the work that we have to do is about education and about dispelling certain myths about the organization and creating more positive counter-narratives about who we are and why we are. That specific action was directed in result because of the death of Ayanna Stanley Jones, and she was shot and she was killed, and the police officer that killed her not only still works for the Detroit Police Department, but has a seat as a co-chair on a commission built around race and equality, I hate to laugh about that, because we're talking about something that is serious and is heartbreaking. That's a tragedy. But there's a level of irony that's in there. When you see police officers, this is not just Detroit, but this is nationwide, when police officers are put on administrative leave, right? So they basically get to go home and they get paid. And I don't want to diminish.
There's a process, though.
There's an absolute process, but there's somebody who's died. And again, this goes back to not focusing on any one individual instance or one individual officer. It's about the system at large, and a system that allows for a lack of indictments, a system that allows for a lack of convictions.
You mentioned just a couple of moments ago that Black Lives Matter Detroit is a nonviolent protest group.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about the group as a large. At the national level, there's been an effort to tie Black Lives Matter to the shooting of police in Dallas and Baton Rouge. One of the shooters made some kind of a statement about Black Lives Matter. It wasn't appear that there was any real affiliation with the group. But it does bring you to the question, for a lot of people, are all of your members committed to nonviolence?
I can't speak for every single person in the country that has joined a chapter. And let's be clear, too, we're not just in the United States. We're in the UK. We're in Canada. We're international. We're a global network. But what I will say is that organizationally, we are absolutely a nonviolent group. And that's not just the Detroit chapter. That's every single chapter of Black Lives Matter that is out there. We all agree to abide by certain guiding principles. And one of the key tenets is uplifting individuals, is understanding the intersectionality that we all live in as a society and as culture. And violence in and of itself is antithetical at its core. The Dallas instance was a tragedy, and it was a tragedy on all fronts. The thing that we have to understand, though, is that unlike in the 60s of the civil rights movement, whether you're talking about SNCC or SCLC or even moving forward to Rainbow Push or National Action Network, social media has allowed for a new type of activism. And so Black Lives Matter got started as a hashtag that grew into a larger organization. And so there is a tendency sometimes for individuals who might be misguided to want to latch on to that. And I'm only saying misguided in the sense that using violence to try to achieve these ends. That was a tragedy on all fronts, and there's not a single member of our organization that supports that type of violence.
I want to talk about this idea of having these open forums and going door-to-door asking people about what they might want to see from your group and what they want to see in their city. Will this be a public document or a statement when you wrap it up at the end of next month?
The platform?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yep. There's – we are not trying to run this secret guerrilla underground organization about – you know, like I think
– That would not be new to Michigan.
That would not be new. No, yeah. Absolutely. But I think we're planning three. We're planning one far east, far west, and then Midtown, New Center area. And those specific dates and times are going to be released in the next coming weeks. But it's about having a conversation. It's about having a conversation with the community. One of the things that the Global Network does very well is not a top-down hierarchical structure. They ask every single chapter to abide within the certain guiding principles. And after that, they kind of say, listen, you are in your community. You're in Detroit. You're in Chicago. You're in Baltimore. You understand what the main focuses are. Here in Detroit, food and water justice is a much larger issue than it might be in other cities, right? The state of educational system is a much larger issue than it might be in other cities. And so we as an organization on the ground, we're trying to make sure that we are meeting the needs of the people that we are trying to serve. The goal is to create sustainable change and social progress, the key word being sustainable. It's not about having a flash in the pan. It's not a moment. It's a movement.
John Sloan III is part of the core leadership team of Black Lives Matter Detroit. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Support for the Detroit Journalism Cooperative on Michigan Radio comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, Renaissance Journalism's Michigan Reporting Initiative, the Ford Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.